This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. On April 30th, 1975, the city of Saigon was taken over by communist North Vietnamese forces. The capture of South Vietnam's capital marked the end of the Vietnam War. It was also the beginning of a perilous journey for an estimated 2 million plus people who fled their home country once Saigon fell. Tim Bui was among that number. He has vivid memories of how many people were trying to flee Vietnam 50 years ago and what happened to some who didn't make it onto departing boats.
We saw these big giant ships full of, you know, Vietnamese refugees, and they would lower the nets. People would just climb on and they would just raise the nets. And, you see people falling into the waters. So we didn't want to be part of it, so we left.
Bui said they went out into the open water instead of attempting to get into one of those ship's nets. His sister, Nicole Ho, says help came to them, but she also remembers how it felt to watch other people try so desperately to escape, to survive.
Well, we did get picked up. It was scary seeing people, you know, falling down to the water and, you know, and then trying to pull you back so that they could get in front of you.
These and other stories are part of a one-hour, Five on Your Side KDSK special titled The Fall of Saigon, 50 Years Later. The program, which premieres tomorrow evening at 6:40, features interviews with St. Louis-based Vietnamese refugees, sponsor families, and U.S. veterans of the Vietnam War. Here to talk with us about the special and its connections to her own life is its executive producer, Tramon Nguyen. Tramon, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Elaine, thank you for having me. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'd like to start with you and your family. You were just a baby in April 1975. Now, on April 30th, where were your parents and your family the day that Saigon fell? And what did they tell you about it?
So growing up, I didn't hear very much about it, only a little bit in passing. But my family at that time was living in Vung Tho, which is a fishing village, which is, you know, right there on the beach, and it's about 4 hours east of Saigon. Mm-hmm. So within that same day, within hours of the fall of Saigon, Vung Tho started to also feel the effects. The bombing started coming. The firefight started hitting us hours later. And my grandpa, this is what I learned during the special, is he didn't think it was going to be a long thing. He thought it was maybe temporary.
Okay.
Maybe if we could go ahead and head over to a family's fishing boat, you know, one of my uncles, great uncles, I should say, maybe the whole family could just kind of wait it out for a week or a couple days, which ended up not being the case.
Mm. And so how long was it before they started moving?
So within that same day on April 30th is when my grandpa and my grandma started having that conversation of, we need to get out. We need to get the children out. He wanted to stay back to stay and watch the house. My grandma was like, no, you need to go ahead and leave with us and the children. So she talked him into it. So he, some of my great uncles, their families, started heading towards the small fishing boat that they had. Mm-hmm. So they ended up boarding that fishing boat. But at the same time, you know, the entire village was trying to evacuate because there was bombings, there was shooting, there was firefights. I mean, the troops were there. Mm-hmm. So in the midst of all this, you can imagine just how chaotic the situation is. So we're trying to make sure everybody is together, everyone can make it to the boats. Everyone is struggling to try to make it towards the sea, mm-hmm. to try to flee all the fighting there on the land. So by the time they finally reached the fishing boat, even more family members came for help. So everybody was crammed into this tiny little fishing boat. And my aunts and uncles just remember vividly just how packed they were and how everyone just, they went out to sea and you could just see hundreds of these fishing boats out at sea, just kind of like waiting for help.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And so that, what happened then? Because you said you didn't hear much about it mm-hmm. when you were growing up.
Right.
Were there things that you like pieced together based on what you did hear, particularly about the period before you all managed to get to the United States?
Yes. So I had heard from my mom in passing every now and then how she was very instrumental in helping my family communicate with U.S. troops, because my grandmother had a small little business. I think I'm not quite sure what kind of business she had. I don't know if mm-hmm. she sold like desserts like Jair or what have you to U.S. troops. So my mother helped her with that and communicated. So my mom had said in the past that she did help communicate a little bit when we were finally rescued, but it took a while. I think our family was out at sea for like a week and a half or so.
Wow.
Just floating mm-hmm. and not having enough food and not having enough water.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my mom just never really spoke about all the trials and tribulations that happened at that point. I heard about stuff once we hit Guam, but not so much in that time before we were in between, like Vietnam to Guam.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was a chore trying to find out a little bit here, a little bit there, because I think they were just dealing with a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
And they just wanted to kind of bury it, and then probably also to protect me
yeah.
from hearing about all that hardship. So I didn't hear how much of a role my mother played in helping our family, because she was 21 at the time, until her passing. Mm-hmm. She had passed away from liver cancer back in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And at her visitation, some of our sponsor families came, and I hadn't seen them in years. And they were like, you know, your mom was the translator for your family. Do you know that? Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, I had no idea.
Yeah.
It's just all these little stories that would come out later, but the elders never really spoke about it.
Right. And is that part of what then motivated you to, you know, put this special together? When did the idea to do this come to you?
So I would have to say it came to me a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was noticing, like, okay, when I hit 50, it's going to be right around the time of the 50th anniversary of the fall of Saigon,
mm-hmm.
the reunification of Vietnam. So I was thinking, you know what? My family sacrificed so much to get us here. And not just my family, but all these refugee families who fled their homes, didn't have anything, barely had anything with them, to find freedom and to have a new life and chance for themselves and for their kids. So in honor to honor them and remember them and where we came from, I was like, I wanted to go ahead and tell their stories. And so I could learn some, their children, all the future generations would kind of have this, because mm-hmm. I think growing up, that generation, the older generation, they kind of kept to themselves. And it was kind of how I was raised too. You know, you don't have to speak about what you had to go through at that point, the fears, the desperation, all that stuff. You just kind of dealt with it and you moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And you just did.
Yeah.
It's just determination, perseverance. You just did it. And that's kind of how I am now. But I'm like, you know what? I need to learn more about my history. And in learning about my history and the history of our people, it would help us better understand ourselves and prepare, you know?
Mm-hmm. And your family was among the first Vietnamese refugees to come to St. Louis. And there's now quite a sizable Vietnamese community
yes.
here in the St. Louis area. How is it that you all ended up in St. Louis to begin with?
So when we were finally picked up by the U.S. ships, it was probably like a week and a half in. We were really lucky. We ended up in Guam. We stayed in Guam for a little over a month because I ended up having some medical issues and clinically died. I was actually saved on the Army, U.S. Army base there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we were there for a little bit, and then from there, we went to Fort Chaffee in Arkansas, which was one of several military bases where the U.S. helped bring refugees in so we could acclimate ourselves, learn the language, learn the culture. From there, we ended up in St. Louis because some families from a local parish here in St. Louis, St. Catherine Laboureille, ended up sponsoring our family. So there was this big vote. It was a big call out. It was across all denominations. It was Christian. It was, you know, Jewish. It was Lutheran. All sorts of religions and denominations were given the call out, please help these, you know, refugees, hundreds of thousands of refugees coming into our country. You know, let's go ahead and help them start a new life. So St. Catherine Laboureille held a vote, and the parishioners actually voted, yes, let's help the Bouy family. And my grandma and grandpa had 11 kids.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, of course, my mom, and then my mom had me. Mm-hmm. So it was 12 of us. I was the youngest at the time. So there was probably about 12 main families within St. Catherine Laboureille in South County that really took care of us and helped us. So it was, that's how we ended up in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing because they actually put money together and fundraised and bought us a small little house.
Oh, for all yeah. of that family.
The
it must
whole
have been very
family.
Busy. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of like, ooh, you know what? It was tiny, but God, it was like a mansion compared to what we had in Vietnam, I'm sure.
Right.
But, you know, a tiny little two-bedroom house with a basement in Afton.
Mm-hmm.
And all of my family members just scooched in there.
Yeah.
And they were amazing, the sponsor families.
I think that the local focus, and this is something that you and I spoke about when we happened to meet somewhere else for an event that is related to the 50th anniversary. Why was it so important for you with this to have a local focus in the special?
To kind of like help others understand that this isn't just Vietnamese history impacting the Vietnamese community. This impacts our community here in St. Louis and beyond our borders, beyond the U.S. You know, so this is a story that is, that has so many connections. It's like a web. And you just, I just wanted to let others know that this story is not just Vietnamese history, like I said, but American history,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. We need to take a quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation with Tramon Nguyen and her executive producing of a KSDK documentary special, The Fall of Saigon, 50 Years Later. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Tramon Nguyen. She's the executive producer of a one-hour Five on Your Side documentary special titled The Fall of Saigon, 50 Years Later. The special airs tomorrow evening on Channel 5 starting at 6:40, and after that it will be available to stream via the 5 Plus app. Tramon, before the break, we were talking about the number of perspectives that are part of this special, you know, what got you thinking about producing this special. And it does feature interviews with refugees who fled Vietnam after the fall of Saigon in April of 1975, but it also includes the perspectives of St. Louis-based people who are not Vietnamese. Was this originally part of your plan, or did it kind of start to happen as you spoke with, primarily with refugees?
Actually, that was always a part of my plan.
Okay.
I wanted to make it very all-encompassing,
mm-hmm.
to kind of drive home the fact that this was such, you know, this monumental event that happened, you know, a decade before that affected so many people in the United States, mm-hmm. as well as in Vietnam. So I wanted to make sure we don't just have the refugee perspective. We also have the veteran's perspective, you know, here in America. I also talk about, you know, my father being a veteran for the Southern Vietnamese Army. He was a pilot. So touched on that, but just really just to drive home just the scope of everything.
Yeah. Now, one of the veterans you spoke with is Mark Morrison, and he lives in the St. Louis region. His story in The Fall of Saigon 50 years later speaks to the lasting impact the war in Vietnam has had on him, and specifically how he felt about coming home without physical injury.
I didn't get wounded along the way. In many instances, I thought, why were you not hit when the guy right next to you was? It was very difficult.
Tremont, another part of Morrison's story involves an emotional visit to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C., that was part of a St. Louis Honor Our Flight trip. How was healing part of that experience for Morrison and other veterans you met and spoke with?
So the Honor Flight, Greater St. Louis Honor Flight, is a wonderful program that helps veterans from many, many wars, not just the Vietnam War, have that chance to go to Washington, D.C., and to visit these monuments that are built in their honor. And the Vietnam War, the Vietnam conflict itself, was such a difficult war because it was the first war that was ever televised. So everyone was watching this beamed into their living rooms. Mm-hmm. And to see the shock of war was traumatic for them. And I think seeing that really turned the tides against many U.S. troops who were over there. I think, we know about the protests that happened. And then, of course, the My Lai massacre didn't help. So many of these troops came home and were not welcomed. Mm-hmm. You know, they were called traitors, you know, worse names. So many of them ended up not speaking of their service, you know, and mm-hmm. then they ended up just burying their experiences, and these chances to go ahead and go on the honor flight helped them heal by being able to deal with it in a different way. You know, they spoke about, you know, never being able to, like, say Mark Morrison said, you know, he lost his brother who was a U.S. fighter pilot. Mm-hmm. They had dinner, you know, one night, and then the very next day his brother went missing in action. So he said, going to the Vietnam Memorial Wall, being able to find his brother's name, he was like, it was like they were united again. And he felt so close. And it, he said it also helped him have some closure because they never found his brother. Mm-hmm. He was just declared dead. So he said just that physical experience, being there, seeing it, touching his brother's name, and then, you know, doing a rubbing of his brother's name and keeping it for himself. That seems to be the ongoing commonality among these veterans who go. They're able to visit these monuments. They are able to find their comrades, relatives who'd passed. And it does help bring them some closure because mm-hmm. they just never were able to deal with it beforehand.
Yeah.
Or in very, very little instances. So, yeah.
And is that part of the thing that you wanted to do with this documentary special, to provide a kind of closure that maybe you have not seen in other approaches to, you know, to covering what has happened over 50 years, what happened in Vietnam?
Yes. Yes. And I wanted it to kind of hopefully be a cathartic thing for these veterans, you know, who maybe never had that chance to go to D.C., to see, oh, you know what? This is, our voices are being heard. Mm-hmm. We're being seen. And by that, hopefully that can help with some of that healing.
Mm-hmm. Now, sponsor families, this is something that you brought up earlier. And St. Louisans who sponsored families like yours, and yours specifically, they are included in this special. And there's a photo that you shared with me of baby Tremont at Grant's farm, and it shows a few members of the South St. Louis County Crandall family, mm-hmm. including the sponsor stories. How did that come to be? And you had mentioned earlier that when your mother passed away, mm-hmm. that some of the Crandalls did come?
Well, it wasn't the Crandalls. There were other sponsor families.
Oh, sure. Okay.
The Crandalls actually ended up, they were one of the main families that helped us when we first came over, but they ended up moving to New York.
Oh, I
so
see.
So the main family that helped us was the Godar family.
Okay.
And I didn't have any, like, more, you know, old pictures like that with
right,
the whole
right.
group. But one of the Godar daughters used to babysit for the Crandall family.
Oh, okay.
Over, you know, she was the one I was like trying and struggling yesterday. I'm like, okay, team, we need to figure out who are these young boys? I
right,
know they're
right.
sponsor families. Somebody please help me. And Jean Godar, who, you know, I tracked down and kind of like stalked because I was just trying to find our sponsor families. She was the first one I tracked down, and I had asked her to be a part of this special. So she was the one who said, oh, it's the Crandall boys. I was like, oh, thank you. She's like, I used to babysit them.
That sounds like a very St. Louis
yes.
story.
We're so interconnected. We have no idea.
Right, right.
But yeah, so I just really wanted to show the big, massive role that sponsor families had for my family, for other families, you know, whether they're in Lutheran churches or, you know, Jewish synagogues or what have you. They had such a massive role in helping us get to where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Godar family, they were a big family too. You know, mm-hmm. they didn't have 11 like us. I think they were like 7 or 8.
Oh, just 7.
Right. So they were, you know, a big
right.
Catholic family.
Uh-huh.
So, it was like, and they had almost the same number of boys and girls, and they just meshed so well with our family.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was putting this together and, you know, trying to go through my mind, trying to figure out, all right, this is kind of the story I want to present, and this is what I want to do. I'm like, gosh, how do I get a hold of the Godars? I was like, God, I haven't even talked to them in decades. So then I was like stalking online, trying to do all my journalistic, let's see if I can find them. Let's see if
thing.
I, right, all
yeah.
the investigative stuff like crazy. And then I found her. And I was like, do you happen to be? And she's like, oh, my God. Well, yes. This is, I'm like, it's Tremont Howwin's daughter. She's like, oh, my God, I know you. So
yeah.
it was great. And then she got me in touch with her sisters, her two older sisters. So the three older, the three daughters of the Godar family are the ones who took part in this special. And it was so wonderful to reunite because they were family for us. They
yeah.
are family.
Right, right.
And we just, you know, time and you kind of lose track of each other. And next thing you know, it's like 50 years.
Yeah.
<It's> like...
and then you reconnect.
Right.
So there are those who are obviously, you know, they were very open to mm-hmm. talking with you. But as far as challenges go, I mean, were there in particular Vietnamese elders who were resistant to talking about some of the things they went through? Were there any language challenges involved?
There were. So when I first put the call out, I put the call out online to see if anybody might want to go ahead and, you know, if they have a relative who was involved in the Vietnam War or who experienced it or was a, you know, if they were in Saigon around that time or if they stayed back, when did they come over? Because I wanted a certain timeline. I wanted it to be between 75 and 79 when they kind of came over, because
mm-hmm.
that was like the first wave of boat people. 79 was the second wave.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to kind of get that perspective because they were all kind of connected to communism taking over South Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get a lot of help online per se, you know, any responses. So my sister and my brother, Kat and Mikey, were kind of like, okay, let us try to do this. And next time we're still, then I got some, but not much. I was like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and try one of my parents' old buddies. I still have his number from like when I got married 20 years ago.
Oh.
Hopefully it's the same number. So I'm like calling him. And then I'm speaking in Vietnamese. I'm like trying. He's like, oh, I don't know.
Oh.
I was like, Jimin, please. I really want us to honor you and the other elders who paved the way for us to be here and really kind of like spoke my case. And he was like, okay, T, okay, let me think about it. I was like, okay. And then he was like, okay, I think I'll do it. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Oh, by the way, do you have another person?
Oh, sure, right.
So I was like, let's go ahead and try to go ahead and push a little bit and see if we can find more people. And he did. He hooked me up with Dr. Fung Nguyen, who's a retired doctor. But, you know, Dr. Nguyen, and he is actually featured in the Fall of Saigon. And actually, you saw a little bit of that package last week. Mm-hmm. He was at, I want to say, Binh Phuc Hospital in Saigon at the time when it fell. So his experience of just being stuck in the hospital and working hours on end, not seeing his family mm-hmm. for over a month or so, is a part of that special. He does talk about that. And then while... you know, Jumin Chun, he was a retired naval officer. He spoke about being able to immediately leave during the fall of Saigon.
Right,
so it was
right.
just many different. Yeah, but I'm just telling you, a lot of the elders that I'd reached out to, even my dad didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just being able to, my uncle, who was the oldest at the time, didn't want to speak about it. And I really had to like, make my case with my aunts and uncles too, who took part. Because yeah. I really, oh, hey, you know, yeah. I would love to hear your perspective. I've never heard of these stories. Mm-hmm. So it was like when I heard them during the special, it was like my first time hearing them.
Yeah.
So it was amazing because my mom, again, she spoke a little bit about Guam and that was about it.
Yeah.
She didn't really talk much about us.
It is interesting how sometimes you learn more from people who are not part of your family, or mm-hmm. if someone who's not part of your family asks them, mm-hmm. they're much more open with some of the things that they maybe have not hidden from you, but have reserved or kept. Mm-hmm. What is it that you've taken away from this experience, Tramon? And you know, is there something that you hope will come out of this one-hour special?
So... from this experience and putting together the special and getting all of these stories together, just I learned that it doesn't matter where you come from, how you brought up, you know, everyone has a story to tell. Everyone has an experience, a life experience that can really connect to someone else. And it's just a matter of giving them that platform and that voice to speak. And in moments of crisis like the Vietnam conflict, you see bad, but often you also see good. Mm-hmm. There's so much good out there. And, you know, if it not were sponsor families and, you know, the U.S. military or, you know, other entities that helped us get to America, we wouldn't be here at all today. I would not have the opportunities that I had today. And to be able to hear those stories and hear those voices, whether it's from refugees, sponsor families, veterans. You know, we also spoke with a gentleman who survived the baby lift crash. Mm-hmm. He spoke about his opportunity, you know, just, and then we spoke with, you know, the new generation of Vietnamese children of refugees, mm-hmm. their experiences, just their chance to storytell just really gives that perspective out there.
Mm-hmm. Tramon Nguyen is the executive producer of the 1 hour Five on Your Side documentary special, The Fall of Saigon 50 Years Later. Tramon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Elaine.
This episode was produced by Elaine Cha.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.